PRC was one of those places. Of course, CIFL also. So I actually wanted to go meet Professor Mittal that I knew. Guy who initiated such programs in PRC. I met him. I told him that I'm looking for a job. He smiled, so he looked around, and at the end he said, you know, PRFL is also a good place. I don't know till today what he actually meant, but I'm thankful for that, whatever he meant, the way I took it. Okay? So he has been throughout, when he was part of ARC, he continuously interacted, and he has helped me whenever I needed something. And his group that he created in BRC is still very active. I know the people who have come after him, and we're still very good friends, and we benefit from that. So Professor Mittal, of course, has won just too many awards for me to name it. I just grabbed something from the Wikipedia and was still surprised. I knew he has won all the awards, but the length and the breadth still surprised me, so I'm not going to tell you everything. He's of course a member of all the Indian academies and also the World Academy of Sciences. And he did his PhD, okay, let me start with his PhD. He did his PhD in Notre Dame,
yeah,
the late 60s.
Yes, okay.
And
67.
Then he did a postdoc, I used to know these things.
UCLA.
UCLA postdoc, and then he came back and joined PRC as a pool officer those days, and then he of course headed that group later. So he went on to win many, many awards, including this academy memberships, and then he has the Senior JSPS Award, the Enardhar Memorial Award from the National Academy of Sciences, the Goyal Gold Medal, and the Indian Science Congress Association Platinum Jubilee Award. And finally, the government recognized him with the Padma Shri in 2003. So he is a pioneer in radiation photochemistry and ultrafast spectroscopy. And I think today you see the breadth of the stuff that he has done and continues to see, because I still see him. The good thing about him, I still see him every valuable conference that he goes to. Still is there. So.
Okay. Thanks, Sudipta, for a very kind introduction. Oh, I see Ranjan here too. Well, thank you very much, first of all, and thank also Satyanarayana for giving me this invitation of this prestigious seminar. Well, when he called me first, I was very reluctant to come once again, because I have already given so many times to TIFR. TIFR is almost like my second house. Many times I have come and given seminars. But he insisted, no, we want to have a seminar. I said, okay. Then I looked at the things which he sent me, a write-up for the asset type of a symposium, what they expect from that and things like that. You can hear me there? Yeah, oh, okay. So I decided, okay, I will come there and see, give my tribute once again to my institute, TIFR, which is actually like a pilgrimage to come to here for basic sciences. I have always thought that if somebody has to think of basic science, we should look for towards TIFR. And I was fortunate to have lots of collaboration in many, many years. And my PA, who happens to be a little clever, he told me, sir, you are going to give a lecture there, and you have already given 6 lectures in TIFR. So what are you going to give? And then he gave me date-wise. He says, sir, first lecture you have given was photons as chemical reagents. It was in 1976 or some such thing. Then second lecture, when Professor Balu Venkatraman organized for the chemical roots of solar energy. The title was Chemical Roots for Solar Energy Conversion. And then I gave a lecture in lasers in chemistry and chemistry lasers when the whole laser program was coming up. And we were trying to say, build up with small amount of money, what should be done in BRC, what should be done in TIFR, and how we can complement each other, what he will do. So we decided we will do transient absorption and they will do fluorescence. And that is the reason why lots of fluorescence here and lot of absorption on their side to begin with. And then sometime or the other, I gave another lecture in which my work on the infrared laser chemistry was discussed there. The title was Agony and Ecstasy of Working with Infrared Photons. There, the idea was to, can we use these infrared photons to break the bonds to our order? Basically, I'm a chemist, as he knows, so I'm always interested in breaking the bonds to my desires. So this area, I spent about almost 10 or 12 years to using infrared lasers to pump energy into well-defined excited states and the vibrational levels, and look whether the energy whether we can do a chemical reactions before the energy randomization takes place. So that's the quite a large number of effort has been done in this area. Then of course chemistry in pico and femtosecond time scale, which is going on for a long time. And the last one I gave was the breaking bonds to order, this is what it is. So most of these things I had given order earlier, but when I looked at that, I said I have not given any lecture on my bread and butter, what I have been doing and what I was recruited for, that was looking at the effect of ultra high energy radiations. And this so happened that when Dr. Bhabha and everybody else started looking at these reactors to be made in India, and there was a decision taken that we will make water moderated reactors. So there was a question asked to all of us when we came out for the training school that, that is a small mistake in the introduction. I came from the training school, third batch, where my contemporaries were, I think, L.C. Gupta here, and Dorai Swami and other people who were there, they were all my contemporaries. So anyway, so at that time, Dr. Bhabha gave us a challenge that we would like to know what happens to the water molecule when you put it inside the reactor. And so from there on, our studies started on the understanding what energy deposition by high energy quanta does in the materials of reactors. He gave a very broad spectrum. He said what happens to the paint inside the reactor, what happens to the cement inside the reactor. So now I am trying to correlate this thing. That's how this whole business of basic research and applied research gets combined together. And nowadays the big air, everything is floating in the air that no, everybody should do only applied research, nobody should do basic research. So I thought I will give my thoughts on this basic question, which are now being troubling all the scientists who are involved in the basic research, and this should we be, what we should do, how we've been doing this, we have done excellent basic research, now the government is saying no more basic research, do applied research. So I have been giving this kind of lectures under the banner of academy at different places, but I guess somebody has to hear what is an important thing, that there is no difference between basic research and applied research. There is either a good research or a bad basic research. So I hope by the end of this today's lecture you will get to know that they are all just combined together basically, they are all one phase or the other. So the title here, as I have given you, is Excitement and Challenges, and I showed. Basically, if you talk to somebody radiation, I am studying radiation effects, and because of the media, you will always get the idea that the radiations are terrible things. And this is because of the hangover of the atomic bomb from the Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That is, all radiations do only the damage. But at the same time, they forget that it also is used for treating the cancer, cobalt-60 therapy, X-ray, entire X-ray diagnosis, everything is related to do with radiations. But on the other hand, it also causes cancer. You see, this is the main problem of the doing work in the radiation chemistry, that you will see two contradiction things here. Treats cancer, cobalt-60 radiations, and it also causes cancer. So how do you understand? For example, it also waste disposal problem. Lot of things in there being done, atomic energy, against atomic energy, is what will you do with the waste of the connected out with the nuclear reactors. But at the same time, this also disinfects the sewage of the entire city, Baroda, in giving clean water with the help of the radiations. So you will see what kind of a thing, how you can do both sides of the thing depends on how you handle them. It degrades polymers. If you take a polymer inside a nuclear reactor, it will degrade into some small pieces, monomers. But at the same time, if you are clever enough, you can induce new polymerization processes with the same radiations. There are many other uses, sterilizers, medical products. It's used for food preservation. I'll give you some examples of that, for extending shelf life, increased export of spices, onions, bananas, and it also be used very specific chemical synthesis. So how does one understand this? When Dr. Bhabha was speaking to us all over, so we were not knowing that how do we go about understanding this, because you see that since the time of alchemy, chemists have been trying to probe the sluggish reactions by heating, and that's how the basic thermal chemistry we have all learned, go a test tube or something, go to the Bunsen burner and heat it, and they are all collision induced chemical reactions. Then came the input of energy through visible or UV photons in the well-defined excited states. So you can excite the molecule to well-defined spectroscopically, well-defined known excited state, whether it is a singlet state or the triplet state, whether it is electronic excitation, whether it is a vibrational excitation, and then you can do chemistry. As you can see, for a typical bond dissociation energy, carbon-hydrogen, carbon-carbon is about 6 to 10 electron volt energy. cobalt 60 gamma rays give you 1.33 MeV energy of the electrons of the gamma rays in this case. So you see then, how can you understand from a chemist point of view, there will be some sensible chemistry by utilizing the gamma rays. As you can see, it is a question of like hammer on the toy. You put 1.33 MeV on a molecule, it will completely dissociate in all directions and you will have no meaningful chemistry coming out of that. So that was the challenge when we started off this, looking at this simple system of looking at the radiation effects on various reactor materials. Very soon we realize, as you can see, well, just to recapitulate the difference between various nomenclatures, there is a thing called radiation chemistry, which we are talking about. This is the chemistry induced by the ionizing radiation, which is about greater 10 to 12 electron volt. That is energy enough to ionize. Usually cobalt 60 gamma rays, 1.33 MeV, as I said today. Usually energy in the range of million electron volt. Energy coupling is by a Compton effect and can be quite selective and predictable. This I will show you today. Oops. Other one, of course, one should not get confused with the help of radiochemistry. Radiochemistry is the chemistry induced by the nuclear transformation. That is, you have changes proton-neutron ratios inside the nucleus, and then the chemistry follows because of the hot atom chemistry. So this chemistry is different from the radiation chemistry. This is the chemistry of radioactive isotopes. Zeller-Chamma reaction is one of the examples of this. Neutron activation analysis, analytical tool which is used based on the hot atom chemistry. But today what we are going to discuss is basically the radiation chemistry. What happens when quantas or photons of this kind of energy is irradiated and put on these materials? How is radiation different from the thermal energy? Well, thermal energy is strongly coupled to the translational, rotational, and vibrational modes of the energy absorber. Ionization of bond rupture and other processes leading to chemical reactions occur only in the higher energy trail of the Maxwellian tail. As you can see here, all of us have learned in 12th standard that how the activation energy is important. Ionization radiation is almost entirely absorbed by the electronic structure of the absorber, which then increases the energy levels of its orbital electrons. It's an effective, efficient generation of reactive species, and I will give you some examples of that. So energy in the form of large quanta can have more pronounced chemical effects than energy in the form of a small quanta. With respect to time, what is happening, the evolution of forms of the absorbed energy, you can see here 10 to the power minus 16 seconds or so. Somewhere, this is a PT scale, log minus log T, 10 to the power minus 16 seconds is the initial absorption process takes place, and then there it goes to electronic energy, and the electronic energy decays, and you get into the vibrational energy mode, and finally to massive of RC particles and heat and dissociation molecules somewhere takes place in 10 to the minus 6 seconds or so. Today's lecture, I'm not going to give about my fast reaction studies. We will see how it happens and how it is very useful, you will see. Well, the basic question was, what happens to a simple molecule like water? If you take a water molecule and irradiate it with 1.33 MeV cobalt 60 gamma rays, what do you expect? Well, of course, basic scientist or any chemist will say, what you expect is very simple. Water molecule will decompose to give you hydrogen atoms and OH radicals. But if it does that, then it's a very dangerous situation because two hydrogen atoms will combine to give you hydrogen gas and two OH radicals will combine to give you H2O2. And these are all very explosive mixtures. If you get inside a reactor hydrogen and hydrogen peroxide, the whole reactor will be in a bad shape. So all around the world, this is the time when different laboratories started working on this and looking at what happens to the water molecule. Simplest molecule, we'll go to complex molecules much later. A simplest molecule like water, if you put in the cobalt 60 radiation, what will happen? Different laboratories in France, in Germany, in America, USA, and India, everywhere people started looking at it. And unfortunately, different laboratories showed different degrees of decomposition. And nothing can be worse in science if you get different kinds of results from the same kind of experiment. So there was a tremendous amount of discussion at that time, 1960s or so, and this found out, very soon we all found out that it was the question of impurities in the water which we were studying. There were always micromolars of impurities were present and they were deciding what chemistry will take place. So very soon it was realized that it was an effect of solute Because when we purified the water completely from all impurities, pure water was found to be absolutely stable. As you can see here, pure water was found to be absolutely stable, and the reason because of that was these transient species which are produced, hydrogen atoms and OH radicals, they then reacted. Hydrogen produced here reacted with OH radical to give you H2O back to hydrogen atom, and then this hydrogen atom reacted with hydrogen peroxide to give you back H2O and OH radical. So that means it was a chain reaction in which you basically get it back into the same molecules that the water molecules are. And that gives a tremendous sigh of relief to all the engineers, nuclear engineers, that yes, indeed, we can think of reactors with water as the coolant and the moderator. And well, simple nuclear physics tells you that hydrogen is the nearest to the neutron, so the best moderator will be hydrogen or heavy water. But then, as a chemist, if you look at this slide, it also tells you there were all experiments were true experiments. There was nothing which was fake. Everything, different laboratories were having different impurities, that's all. But otherwise, as soon as all the laboratories made everything pure water, there was, everybody was got the result that there is zero decomposition of water inside a even reactor with 1.3 MeV of energy. But to a chemist who is looking at chemical reactions, he found out that what was this indeed reactive species, hydrogen and oxygen being produced, can we utilize them? So radiolysis of water gives you a mixture which is a redox mixture. See, we are getting a very potent reducing species. On the other hand, we are getting a very potent oxidizing species present in the system. In short-lived oxidizing species OH and a long-lived reducing species hydrogen atom was discovered. And that's the time when solution phase, you can think of hydrogen atom and OH radicals at that time, which can then rapidly react with the solutes to form unusual species. And the literature, large amount of literature suddenly came up saying that we can produce unusual valence states of various ions. We can see number of chemical reactions taking place, oxidation and reduction when you put into this. So whole literature of radiation chemistry evolved, and almost now more than 6,000 compounds have been studied with respect to this, what happens to this. So these, unless we had done these basic studies, we could not have done. For example, the entire reactor could not have been made if this was very clear to us that the water will not decompose because of the very fundamental studies done earlier at this stage. Even more, I'll show you. Very early theoretically, people have said that if you take a water molecule and irradiate with that, the first and primary process will take place is the ionization process. Now, obviously, there is a H2O plus an electron, and these two then, what happens afterwards? These two may either recombine together to give you an excited state of water molecule, and the water molecule excited state may again decompose into hydrogen atom and OH radical, which then give rise to hydrogen and hydrogen peroxide. But there were some theoreticians who said, well, this may be true, but at what time scale does it happen? So they very easily they calculated it in 10 to the power minus 14 seconds or so. This H2O plus will react with the H2O plus, which is H2O, which is available to you in large quantities, 55 molars of that, and very soon the reaction will take place, a proton transfer. You will get very soon H3O plus and OH radicals. So you see, you converted H2O plus reactive species into this. What happens to the negative species? Flaxman said at that time, predicted on the basis of just theory, that these electrons will then solvate inside the water molecule, and the electron will become hydrated electron. Not only hydrated, just like you put sodium chloride in water, the chloride minus will get hydration, solvation phenomena in the water, and that's how we get solvation. So he said if the chloride can be solvated, electrons will also be solvated. And there are a lot of theory about this, how the solvation will take place, will not go into detail. But the important thing is he predicted that if the water electron will be solvated, there will be a blue absorption of that. So they are called blue electrons at that time. And he said, he also predicted that an unsolvated electron will be absorbing in the red region, and that he called as red electrons. In Tata Institute of Fundamental Research, where everybody is discussing electrons, it's unusual to look at the red electrons and the blue electrons. But very soon, I will explain to you what happened. For example, you take...
So, typically,
progression, we tend to see that the higher energy molecule, I'm talking about molecules, which are not solvated, would have the bluer spectrum. And then with solvation, of course, the energy comes lower and you get...
here it was absolutely different. It's a reverse of that, which you see. Chloride, for example, it happens to what you said. So his calculation showed clearly that there will be blue electrons in this. Now, of course, as soon as all of us saw this paper, we all ran to our laboratories with the test tube in the water and irradiated and tried to look whether any color change has taken place, whether the water which was colorless has become blue. All around the laboratory, nobody saw a blue color. So we all thought, what, something is wrong. Then only by the time, this was the time when the flash photolysis was being discovered by George Porter and other people, and we said, well, can we do something equivalent to that and look at the real time scale, what happens into this? And that led to our new system of which we made, it's called pulse radiolysis, in which we had a LINAC beam which was pulsed, 7 to 10 MeV LINAC beam, which is capable of generating a wide variety of reactive transient species in large enough concentrations and short time to study. And then it allowed us to do both temporal studies as well as the structural behavior in the real time scales by using normal techniques of optical absorption, optical fluorescence, time resolved ESR. Ranjan is sitting here, they developed the entire whole time resolved ESR in this TFR. Of course, resonance Raman spectroscopy, transient conductivity. You can do any of this detection technique and look at this transient species and look at the secondary reactions which this transient species will do. And very soon it was realized, lo and behold, this is the simple pulse radiolysis setup in which you just have basically replaced a laser beam, or at that time there were no laser beams, there were only flash lamps. So you change those flash lamps into a LINAC energy accelerator, which is 7 to 10 MeV, and you have a sample here, and you do basically a spectroscopy in the real time scale, as you see. You can a monochromator, photomultiplier, everything, etc., and you get a spectrum of the transient species. So as it is in the Encyclopedia Britannica, this is said, discovered by the radiation chemists within last decade, the hydrated electron ranks with the protons and OH minus as the most fundamental species of aqueous solutions. Its discovery is one of the most important achievements in the chemistry in the century. Why is it so important? Because this is the most potent reducing species known to chemists till today. The redox potentials is the highest of that kind. But of course, there is always the question asked, what happens before hydration? Is that dry electron also reactive? Does it do any chemistry? Well, I will come back to this point of less than 15 seconds or whatever has happened, but the time taken of solvation was important. How much time does it take for the electrons to get solvated? And there was a lot of discussions on this, and I will tell you why. You can see here, there's a spectrum of all the transient species can be seen in different laboratories. The hydrated electron absorbs here, as you can see here, about 730 nanometers at the highest peak. And very high extension coefficient. So it's a very strong absorbing species. So if you really now look with the nanosecond time scales, that is the optical absorption spectroscopy, you get the blue color, which is because of this tail here. It is in this command part. Then electron in ammonia, for example, we all know the electrons, if you put on ammonia, you get produced electrons in ammonia, which absorb somewhere in this region. But then if you do the same experiment, not in water, but in, let us say, cyclohexane, an organic solvent, or in xenon or krypton, then you get the spectrum which is somewhere here given as 1200 nanometers in the infrared. So you can see this is what the prediction of the red electrons were, where the solvation has not taken place. And this is the blue electron where the solvation has indeed taken place here. So, well, different theories are there. Joshua Jotner from Israel has given, many people who have given the theory how the solvation takes place and what are the excited state involved in this absorption spectrum. But main point here for a chemist is that it allows us to look at these various transient species in the real time scale. We can see now where the OH radical is, where HO2 radical is, where the hydrated electrons are. And once you look at this spectrum, now you have a handle to look at the reactivity of these species with many compounds, whomsoever you like. For example, if there is a paint or if there is a hydrocarbon or anything, etc., you take, you want to know what the reactivity is going to be inside a reactor, you will be able to get the absolute rate constant of a chemical reactions. And that's what happened. Now look at this, for example, just a case which we did experiment many, many years ago. That hydrated electron, if you take a compound like benzylamine, this is C6H5CH2 and it's the protonated form, electron reacts with the protonated form of ammonia and gives you ammonia and benzyl radical. And benzyl radical can be produced by flash photolysis by doing many different ways in alternate methods, and we knew the absorption spectrum of benzyl radical, and we measured the benzyl radical at 325 nanometers. You can see the rate of formation of given here. And simultaneously, because you know now the absorption of hydrated electron, you can sit on this with the second monochromator and you look at the decay of the hydrated electron at the same time, and you can see they're almost the same rate constant. So there's a one-to-one reaction, this decays, and this is newer, this is form with some 1 millimolar of benzylamine or something of that kind. So this gives us a handle by looking at that and finding rate constants of different stories. We have now in our laboratory, in other laboratories, the entire whole business of various free radicals, which we always used to write in our textbooks and our books, saying that there is a species like hydrogen atom, there is OH radicals, we never saw in those things. But now there is a chance not only to look at them directly in front of your eye, but also look at the dynamics of chemical reaction with hundreds of different compounds. So you actually have now generated all the spectroscopic data, electrochemical data. You see all this H quark surplus here, 2.7 electron volt. There's a pK value of these things. There's a lambda maximum. There's extinction coefficient. Each one of the property has now been seen. You can also see secondary radicals like HO2, which then has a pK of its own to give you O2 minus. Sulfate minus radical, you can give shears, carbonate minus, Cl2 minus, and we have a whole bunch of library for at least 2000 different radicals whose spectroscopy, whose electrochemistry, everything has been now completely ordered and known. And now the National Bureau of Standards have published books on this, that is all the rate constant, everything, etc., has been measured, and they have all been, fundamental rate constants have been now formulated. And you can see what you can study now, the entire chemical reactions. I'm just giving you a few examples of that. Take the hydrated electron, and react with an inorganic compound like cobalt amino complex, and the electron by one, they will reduce the species. You see here, this is the 1, plus 2, and then later on plus 2 absorption. And this is a time scale here in microsecond. In 1 microsecond, you get this absorption. In 14 microsecond, you get 4H2O molecules now change. Then 90 microsecond, you can 5. And in 700 microsecond, all the ammonia molecules have been replaced by the water molecules. So you gradually have a whole picture of coming out how the whole thing has taken place. You can even see stereochemistry changing in the real time scale. You can see start with the square planar compound, platinum complex of this, react with OH radical, you produce this species, reacted with this, and you have this trigonal pyramid. Then similarly you start with the octahedral, then you finally get in a trigonal bipyramidal, which has all of them have different absorption spectrum. So you can look at them at different time scales. What is the way the reaction is taking place in the real time scale? Another compound which we did a few years ago, that is we start looking at this, some biological molecules of this combined, how does the reaction takes place, because basically radiation effects is directly the fundamental of the radiation biology. So how does this radiation effects produces first electrons, because everywhere we have water in the body, and these electrons then react with different amino acids, proteins, nucleic acids at different places. So what is the chemistry taking place, how does it react? So hydrated electron take the simple phenylalanine amino acid, it reacts with the pH 6, it gives you this particular radical which is given here, cinnamic acid and ammonia. This ammonia is deaminated. But you see, if you just do the same reaction and change the pH from the pH 6 to pH 11, nothing happens, no ammonia comes out, and the ammonia electrons do not react to the amino group, but instead go to the benzene ring. And it produces a negative ion here, which then protonates and gives you this particular radical, which has an absorption spectrum quite different from the absorption spectrum here. So now, the thing to understand is that the species which we have produced are not only highly reactive, I will give you the rate constant of this, etc., with many molecules, but also very smart. So they know under what conditions they have to react. If they have to react in alkaline solutions, or if they have to react in acidic solutions, if they have to react in neutral solutions, where the chemistry is going to take place, which group they are going to attack. So these are smart transient species. They are just nowadays, everybody is talking about smart cities and smart everything. These are the transient species which have such a high reactivity, but still they know where exactly they have to do reaction. I will give you a lot of theory about this business, that is not the reason. But this is one of the examples of that. Similarly, the OH radicals, you see, another oxidizing species. If you take the same molecule from benzylamine or phenylalanine, at pH 9, for example, chemists are very like to do these changes, pH 9, its OH radical will react to the benzene ring and give you this absorption spectrum, which is 320 nanometers, and finally, it will become tyrosine. So you change from phenylalanine to the tyrosine by looking at this hydroxy radical attachment to the benzene ring. But just change the pH from 9 to 11.9. At pH 13.5, because the OH has a pK value of 11.9, so you have now OH converts itself into O minus, and this O minus then reacts not in the same way as this OH radical react in the ring. Instead, it is absorbed alpha position here of this position, and you get a radical which is entirely different radicals. So you can see now this will give rise to final pyruvic acid as the product, this gives rise to tyrosine as the product. So we are collecting in those days all the basic fundamental data on what happens to this reactivity at different pHs, different reactive, different rate constant, what happened, so that in order that later on we can make a complete library of these things and we can predict now what will happen at this pH, what will happen this compound if you take at this type, is a protonated form or non-protonated form, we will can predict that this is the way the chemistry is going to be. Take another example of OH radical. If you take OH radical and react with a compound like iodobenzene, a very simple compound, this iodine in a benzene ring. If you just take pH 6, normal water molecule, the OH radical will attack to the benzene ring and it produces this radical, which has a lambda max about 325 nanometers. This is the extinction coefficient, this is the G value. So entire physical chemistry is known about this. That means at pH 6, OH radical tend to go into the ring, but just change the pH. See what happens, and it's not randomly because we know what happens to the OH at different pHs, and just change to pH 1.5, add some acid into the same solution, you don't get any of these absorption spectrum. Instead, there is a charge transfer takes place from here to here, producing this H5 iodine positive ion and the OH minus here, it's 2O, which is absorption spectrum is quite different from them, extinction coefficient, everything, etc. Again, this is an example of smart hydroxy radicals. They know where to go at what positions. So now, if once we know this fundamental aspects of the reactivity of this transient species, we can now predict and are able to say that what will happen at different pH in the body, different pHs of solutions, what will happen at the reactivity if there are five different amino acids are present, then where it will be go first and when the energy transfer will take place. Entire story we are not able to build up. Just by learning at the very basic fundamental reactions of these transient basic reactions. For example, if you want to do a pulse radiolysis of a monomers, cyclohexyl methacrylate, you can now look at the spectroscopy of every step by step of polymerization and you can measure, for example, the spectrum of the T1, then T1, then T2, then the absorption of the site, then T5 up to this, the entire rate of the polymerization you can watch in front of your eyes, absorption spectrum wise, and not only you can watch the spectrum, but also you can find the rate of each particular steps quantitatively. So you know with cyclohexamethadiene, which OH radical, this will go this way, with electron it will go this way. So what kind of polymer you would like to make and what kind of properties that polymer should have will be able to predict by looking at the simple chemical reactions and the environment in which to do these chemical reactions. Yeah, so let's now go back from these examples and say you, this is the time, a lot of work was going on in this area, and it is, and somebody said that it's written that gods and goddesses of radiation chemistry of aqueous solutions have said that let there be spurs with certain characteristics and understanding of the water radiation chemistry will follow. Recently, I may borrow from St. Augustine, at least two radiation chemists have reserved themselves a very special place in hell. One who has chosen to question the very existence of the spurs, and both have asked, even if there were spurs and hydrated electrons, what preceded them? As I said before, so there has to be something which hydrates. So what was the question? Is there that the species has a chemistry? So as I said here, this is the blue electron. There must be something which is hydrated electron here. And what is the time taken for this process? And is there a new chemistry which this can give, which this cannot give? You know, these are very crazy questions. You're asking so fundamental questions. What does it matter whether it gives or this gives or that gives? But you will find very soon different reagents which have reactivity. Different reactivity from hydrated electron and different reactivity of dry electron. So he even called a term which is called dry electrons. Hamel found many reagents which are not good scavengers of hydrated electron, but suppressing the G hydrogen and their reactivity correlated with the electron traps in the hydrocarbons or the rare gases. So you can always produce electrons in hydrocarbons, electrons in rare gases, and look at their reactivity, whether this reactivity measures comparable with the reactivity of this dry electron so far. And that's why this whole concept of the dry electrons came into the literature for a long time. And now we have a whole story that how the dry electrons come, what is the time scale it takes, and what is the time scale it takes to go to wet electron, then hydrated electron, and their whole business in the whole literature is full of this. That what the entire time scale has been now measured with respect to this picosecond and femtosecond time scale looking at the study. So is there a chemically significant species which are unhydrated like electrons and hydrocarbons or electron rare gases, that is said dry electron? So earlier, for example, we knew that in 10 picosecond time scale, for example, half of the electrons which are produced already being hydrated. That is, if you look at the G values of this, the total quantity of the electron produced, half of them were in the blue and half of them were in the red. In later on, 76, with 2 picosecond pulses, we looked at this photoionization of iodine minus, you can produce electrons here, and 2 picosecond absorption in the infrared region, 1200 nanometers, and not in the visible region at all. But now, as the technology improved, after 5 picosecond absorption shifted to visible region, as you can see, through their time of solution you can see here. And then, of course, different labs came up. At present, now we have lasers of 8 femtoseconds or so, or maybe even better than that. Then what will happen in those cases? New stories will be developing. But why? How can it happen? How can it, electrons can solve it in such a short time scale? Because the dielectric relaxation time of the water is 10 to the power minus 12 seconds range, maybe few picoseconds. So what does it matter? How does it happen that the electron gets trapped in the less than 10 to the power minus 12 seconds, it get hydrated? That gives another question, whether there is an evidence of pre-existing traps available in the structure of water. Or this, so basically the question is, does electron dig its own grave? Dielectric relaxation, and then you produce a water molecule. All electrons fall in the pre-existing traps in the structure of water molecule. So there was a lot of fundamental questions being asked at that time. What happens with the electron when you eject from the ionization, whether it already goes into the dielectric relaxation process or there are already traps available, there it goes. So new questions are being asked. Now people are looking at this at the attosecond time scale, 10 to the minus 18 seconds or so. And by 2020, I think, we will have the answer of this business of why the electron takes such a short time for existing itself. Before the dielectric relaxes, the water molecule has time to even relax, you get a solvated of electrons taking place. Anyway, so we will now, you see now, these are all examples I have given for a basic fundamental chemistry point of view that we want to understand what is happening into this. But why are we so quibbling? Why are you so much worried about dry electron, hydrated electron? Because there are tremendous applications in the radiation biology. For example, look at this amino acid glycine. This is the simplest of amino glycine. Its reaction rate when measured with hydrated electron is 10 to the power 7. That is very low reactivity. But the same glycine, if you react at the very short time scale with the hydrated dry electrons, the rate constant is 4 times 10 to the 10, 1,000 times faster reactivity of the dry electrons. So in cell, because of high concentration of solutes, dry electron reactivity becomes very significant. And so we have to understand what is the reactivity at the most fundamental level of this, whether reactivity of this is different, because if you want to predict that what will happen to the radiation effects on this peptide or a protein, we must know at what time scale and how fast the reactivity it is. And if a protein has different amino acids, then which amino acid will be reacting first, which amino acid will be decomposed first compared to other. So we have to have a catalog, the entire rate constant. Unfortunately, now we have very large amount of catalog data available with us. And as I said, NBS has made a whole story of the whole thing, that they have a book which you can measure which rate constant is there. They have compared the rate constant measured in different laboratories and made some metrics on that. All this possible could take place because everybody was interested in looking at the fundamental chemical reactions which take place at this point. And then, as nowadays, people ask, what is the application of all that? Why are you studying all these things? What purpose is being served, etc.? Let it be dry, let it be wet, who cares? But I will show you now from now on some examples where this transient species, which is the free radicals, let us say, basically all of them have free radical species, electron, hydrogen atom, OH radical. They have introduced a multi-billion dollar industry providing unique technological products, which is what I call a real dot-com industry now has started. This dot on one dot single here has started this. How come? Because this basic studies of radiation chemistry on free radical reactions have given rise to different polymers, different kind of polymers and different new polymers. They have the implications in the health. They have the implication of structure versus reactivity, produce nanoparticles at different sizes, shapes and other things. Same free radicals and this atmospheric chemistry, what happens in the chemical reactions. So basically, if you understand the basic fundamental reactions of these free radicals as species transient, you have an application everywhere in all these areas. I'll try to give few examples on that. Factors leading to advancement in industrial radiation processing. For example, you see the entire circle and then that basic studies which are started from studying the radiation effects on materials by radiation chemistry leads to the new polymers and polymer tenor-based polymer industry. And then this has happened to the accelerator studies which give you this. So the entire process is a circle in which one should go and the entire radiation processing industries. Radiation technology based chemical modifications, polymerization, cross-linking, cables, wires, and bilirubin strips for jaundice, I'll give some examples of that, not all. Biological modifications to DNA in cells, sterilization of medical products which lead to radiation preservation of food, extension of shelf life, and physical modifications of coloration of various species. I'll try to give some example in the time. First example which we were involved in, this is very, very simple experiment. Normally, all of you know that there is a large amount of monazite sands available at the Kerala beach surf, and normally we were exporting large amount of the monazite sands to Japan and other companies, and they were separating various rare earths, and we were selling them at $500 per ton, the monazite sand, in truckloads of that, and we were buying from them separated uranium, etc., at $2,500 per kilogram from Japan. This was going on for a long time because this is a big mining industry. But you see, basic ideas of this understanding of this reactivity of this free radicals led to a very simple method of separation of europium from rare earths. Rare earths is a mixture of various things, but the useful things are europium and a few others. So we took simple question of mixture of all the rare earths and irradiated them with the isopropyl radical. An isopropyl radical, this is the simple radical, which then reacts with those things and reduces the europic, which is produced in the center, and europus. And europus then precipitates out, and none of the other rare earths, europium, samarium, terbium, etc., are precipitating out. So a very simple method of separation of the europium by a simple technique based on the rate constant as well as the redox potentials of that were discovered, in which now we are now producing a tons of quantities of the europium materials in this rather than selling them at monazite sand at such a cheap rate. Hence at pH 7, all selectivity reduces europium in the mixture of anthracites. So just simple knowing those rates constant and knowing the reactivity of different free radical, in this case isopropyl free radical, one could detect what can be done and how we can use it for this case. You can produce, for example, Madame Balloni in France has been very famous for this. She produces all kinds of metal cluster synthesis and nanoparticles. They produce free radicals, react with this. One electron transfer takes place to give you M0. You start with M plus 1, you start M0, then they start corrosion and the various M2, M3. You can look at the entire spectroscopically in time resolved fashion how it started with one particular M0, then became two particles and three particles, and finally you get a stable aggregate of different types. So you give you the entire picture of the what kind of an aggregate you would like to make. You can make radiation induced metal clusters of this kind, and this is work which we did some time back with cadmium. Diffraction pattern of the cadmium particles resembles shape of close packed hexagon. D-spacing matches with the entire 0-1 lattice, so you can produce very nice parts, small particles of cadmium or cadmium sulfide or various whatever you want to produce. Very simple strip method for detection of bilirubin. As many of you know, there is a disease called jaundice, and many villages all the time we have difficulty of finding out what a good solution is and how to detect the person has a jaundice. You have to go through a city and go to very expensive Fochet test. It is a conventional biochemical test method here. So we discovered a simple polymer by looking at this polymer rate constant. My colleague Gopinathan discovered this bilirubin with pyoagmentin in urine, induction of infective hepatitis. So it required quick and inexpensive, reliable and simple method to detect in range of this milligram to this milligram. So by knowing this rate constant and by knowing these properties of the polymers which we are meeting and how we can tune the properties of the polymer, we could produce a polymer which will allow the jaundice, which will allow the bilirubin part of that come out, and you will see the color. So now we have made a large number of strips. It's like a pH paper. You have the how much amount of bilirubin, you take the strip, dip inside the urine, and the color comes out, and there is a chart outside which tells you how much amount of bilirubin is in your urine. And it is you can do in every village places to find out how much bilirubin is coming. And there we have measured this and 100% agreement and the results of this to this. So the technical know-how of this simple method has now been transferred to four different manufacturers, and currently they are under commercial production. You can buy from outside. There's a company in Hyderabad which tells you on 50 paisa per strip. So this is the kind of thing, information now, which I'm trying to say that, look, we didn't, you know, we were not working on finding out this. We were working on different polymers. We were finding out the rate constant. And finally, it turned out when somebody looked at the mind, that okay, we're looking for some polymer which will allow this kind of a thing to happen. It was very easy from there to get to the measurement and finally come to the applications of that. So there is nothing with difference between the basic research and the applied research. If one has to keep your mind open, one has to see that what it, where it can be rooted, whatever information I've got, and how it can be utilized for the general public. I'll give you polymers, for example. Radiation effects, I discussed the polymers. That you have this very interesting story that if you, depending on the dose of the thing, you can either make a cross-linking and make a polymer of very high molecular weight, or you can chain scission. You can produce them and break it. An entire story behind that, at where it will be cross-linking, where it will be chain scission, is a very fundamental question, which once you understand that, then you can tune and make your polymers whichever way you like. And this, there are so many polymers which have been made in our laboratory. You start with polymer material, radiation, ionized excitation, physicochemical reactions, produce active species, bond scission, then chemical reaction, large ambient effect. Then you can either do cross-linking or things like that. And I'll give you some example of that. One of the examples is new hydrogels we produced in our lab. And basically, again, it came from simple idea that in a country like India or poor, due to prevailing socio-economic conditions in developing country like India, incidence of burn cases is very high. Radiation processed hydrogel program was undertaken to provide cheap and effective means to treat burn patients. And you see what it was? The basic idea behind that was simple this. You produce this polyvinyl alcohol hydrogels, which are biocompatible, contains about 90% water, effective barrier for the bacteria, and useful for burn wound industry. I learned after a long time that when you get burned, no other medicine is required. Basically, what you require is to keep away from the infection, and body takes care of itself as long as you keep it moist. So what that was the information we knew. Now, that means you wanted a chemical, you wanted a gel which will have very large amount of water. At the same time, it will have permeable holes inside which will take away all the excludates from that side. So you can produce now hydrogels, water-soluble polymer, international polymer, sterilized crosslink, and everything is being simultaneously sterilized because it is done by radiation of 25 kilogray. So once you, when you keep any doctor or any person, he doesn't have to sterilize anything, just open that and give you the directly attach it to your wound. And it does not give you that kind of a feeling, and you remove any Johnson & Johnson putty, it gives you remove it. There is so much amount of pain. Ouch, cricket noise. But this one is very good. You will see now. The effect of that in radius burn surgeons, we have tried in 5 different hospitals. So much third degree burns even have been rectified. You see this now. This burn was started from here, and then it has become like this. It's very simple. This has been now, the technology has been transferred, I think, and the technology transferred to different companies, because in the government department, you cannot do it a specific company. So I'll show you a few examples. This is now being in the market. There's a based company in Hyderabad, Hygel, is producing, and they have given us some money also as well. But basically, what I'm saying is this whole thing can be, once you understand what happens is you can tune your knowledge into the wherever the applications is required. There is no dichotomy between basic research and applied research. I'm very sorry at present the country's ambience in the political circles are such that they are saying basic research is not at all required, only do applied research. You can't do applied research unless you understand the basic research. And for that you have to support pilgrim places like Tata Institute of Fundamental Research and many fundamental studies, CCMB and other places where looking at the basic foundations of the whole science takes place inside. You see now, which is now available in the market, you can buy that in the fast track, and written here, it is developed by the Board of Examination of Isotope Technology, Department of Atomic Energy. These are different companies that are selling them, and they're selling them at 50 times less price than the Johnson & Johnson hydrogels which are selling in the market. And Johnson & Johnson tried very hard to sell our technology to them so that they will dump it, and they are selling at 500 rupees hydrogel. Now we are selling it about 5 rupees a hydrogel in the market. It was tried on leprosy patients, for example, at Anandavan, which is, you know, a very famous place where the Baba Amte has started long time back for the leprosy thing, and he used to live with the leprosy patients, and the scars and the ulcers which leprosy patients have, he said, okay, let's try on this. So we went there, tried on some of these people, and so much success was obtained that when he looked at the result, he said, when scientists meet common man, atoms smile. This is Baba Amte, he told us this. So now we have giving them all at primary health centers. Hydrogel dressings can be stocked at primary health centers for its availability use of rural people. And these are called only 50 paisa per hydrogel, depending on the size. We can make in size and mold a different care from 5 rupees to 50 paisa. Let me give another example. This is all of us, or all young people, boys and girls, want to donate some diamond to their girlfriends. And normally diamonds are more valuable if they're colored, and if they're colored, extraordinarily colored, if they're different non-invasive color. And with electron beam radiation, you can produce beautiful colors into this. You can produce green color, blue color, sea green color after radiation. Originally it was dirty, you know, diamond, light yellow, light brown, and the size of this thing was given. So color after radiation, you can produce whatever you want. And they have to know this. This is again basic research. You have to know what dose to give, to give at what temperature to give to produce what kind of color, and these are now being sold at exorbitant prices by the Israelis and other people. And our diamond export industry is very much after that. They bring every week, I think, a large number of their diamonds, and we get it irradiated from that under different conditions and the tremendous safety or stability. And there is a stability of the color up to 500 degrees centigrade. The temperature of the diamond does not change. Irradiation conditions, water cooled target, dose somewhere in megahertz and things of this kind. That's not so important for this lecture. But what I'm saying is, if you understand what happens in this, why the blue color is coming at certain dose, why the green color comes at certain dose, what at certain temperature, some of the F centers and V centers are getting bleached inside a diamond and you're producing these different colors. So once you know the basic fundas of this, selling into the diamond industry is a very easy job, and they are all in line. Actually, they have to be in line to get their diamonds irradiated at the point. One more example, I think. How much time I have?
Couple of minutes.
This is about the seabed sludge treatments. You know, the whole thing, as I told you, one that it creates a lot of. We always say that the. What can we do with the waste treatment of the reactor? But I can show you an example of this, how we're treating the waste of an entire city, Baroda here. Baroda sewage contains here, sewage sludge is here, and then it comes to the radiation sources, and it goes to the drying brand, a municipal sewage treatment plant with radiation facility. And the sludge which comes out on this side is a fantastic biofertilizer, which has no bacteria, no pathogens inside, because all of them have been killed by the radiation plant, and you get a very clean sludge of fertilizer here on this side. So we have now started from the waste, and we're producing now money. All the farmers in this area are buying in the morning to evening to these fertilizers which are coming from this. Well, if I had time, I'll show you more slides. But basically what happens is you kill all the coliforms which are available into this. So initially species, you had lots of coliforms, and after 500 minutes of radiation, you had zero coliforms in the system. You can also do radiation processing of food, because the impurities of the security and food safety and quarantine purposes. Understanding of basic things is, again, as I said, we want to understand what happens in the after radiation. Once you knew what happens in the radiation, we can design the dose which will be safe for human being, but at the same time it will kill the bacteria. An example of that, there is the large of advantage of this, because we don't do any chemicals, physical and non-additive process, chemical residue free and eco-friendly process. This is in great demand now for all the places. For example, I will give you some example of that. Applicable to food in pre-packed conditions, preserves food in natural form, cold process does not change its texture or the aroma of the thing, and safe to the workers. It avoids, for example, dose, depending on the dose, sprout inhibition in potatoes and onions at very small dose. Delayed ripening, for example, of bananas, 0.25 to 0.75. Earlier, there was a big problem of exporting bananas from India to Moscow or some places where it takes 15 days on the ship. But nowadays, by irradiating them and then sending it to this, there is a delayed of ripening takes place. Insect disinfectations, then you can have, you see here, the irradiated food, for example, is here. And non-irradiated food is already having all kinds of things here and bacteria into this. Now, there are so many commercial food irradiation facilities now in India. Not only now BARC does this, there are private companies who have come up and taken up, because they saw there is a lot of potential of export. So because now every country, Europe, whenever they want to import anything from India, they want it should be free from all bacteria of this kind. So we have one source here in atomic energy, which is FIPLI, which is designed and installed in the ISOMED. SARC, now we have in Rashmi, there is at Bangalore, then there will be in Jodhpur, the New Bombay, Nashik. There are so many now even coming every year. Tons of materials are being irradiated and are being exported, just because there was a 20-year program. This took such a long time, because to prove that this nothing happens to this is quite safe to radiation with certain dose. And we have to prove them at certain amount of dose, your things are quite safe. Radiation processing of food, the current safety status went through different committees, American Medical Associations, WHO and everything, etc. That we don't have to detail. Last, I think, maybe slide of that. That is, not only we had to, people said, okay, maybe somebody is telling us rotten food and saying that it has been irradiated. How do we find out whether it's irradiated food or not irradiated food if you put simultaneously in the market? So we had to find a method by which we can find out that this particular strawberry has been irradiated and which strawberry has not been irradiated. Or potato. So there is this again basic research, and this is published. That is, you find out certain things. For example, in potato, every potato has a phenylalanine. And phenylalanine, if it is irradiated, you will irradiate with OH radical. And as I showed you before, it will be random attack at the rings. It will get para hydroxy and ortho hydroxy. Very simple thing, and you can detect them by fluorescence lifetime or any simple method by which. But in the natural process, you get only paratyrosine. So once you see a compound and look at this compound, that this is how much nanomolars of this can be detected. So based on quick determination of half time with the fluorescence, ortho and meta isomers can only be detected in irradiated samples. In the natural samples have only para isomers. So very simple method has been detected to find out which molecule, which potato has been irradiated, which potato has not been irradiated. And you can find out very easily, and you can label them. Nowadays, there is a requirement, legal requirement, should be labeled that they are irradiated, not irradiated. So, in the last, I would just say that as I tried to convince you that there is no difference between basic research and the applied research, as long as you do good research, but you should be aware of all the political problems which are facing and look at these things now, newspaper media, what kind of news they will give. The Indian Express, there was a few news, buffalo has been killed in Tarapur by drinking radioactive leak contaminated water. But scientifically it was a scene, the activity in the water was found to be 6 becquerels, where the WHO, IAEA permits 10 becquerels in the drinking water. So it was much less than the what permitted amount is available into the Tarapur. But simply newspaper will write, no, 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 it's no good, you should not irradiate, you should not do this. Somewhere here, this is in the Mirror, I think, your food will glow in the kitchen because they said you have been irradiated and you have made him radioactive, how can you eat that? I can tell you the fact that if you radiate anything with cobalt 60 radiations of 1.33 MeV, you can never produce radioactivity in the food or any other process. If somebody can produce radioactivity by 1.33 million gamma rays, he will get Nobel Prize. Because for doing that, you require more than 10 MeV of amount of energy for the any gamma rays to produce neutrons. And unless there is a neutron, there will not be radioactivity. So, but point is that this kind of news will spread. All kinds of NGOs will be there who will be telling you, no, no, this is not good, that is not good, this is very bad. They don't know how the earlier process was much worse, for example, of the radiation of sterilization. So my point is that continue doing basic fundamental research and look and convince yourself. Automatically the things will be known to you where you can apply. Just keep your mind ready that yes, this particular substance, this particular information or knowledge which I have obtained can be utilized for this kind of purpose. I am sure all of us would like to use that knowledge to some benefit. We are never against having saying that no, we don't want to use any of our knowledge which we obtained for basic applied work. But basically everything comes from the basic fundamental research. And I salute to TIFR that is continue doing world class basic science research. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Professor Mittal, for putting fundamental research at the pedestal that it deserves and also showing that we should be aware of the societal and practical needs.
Yeah.
Because if something comes about, we should be we should have our eyes open. So anyway, I'm sure he'll be willing to answer questions.
Yes, sure. Anything?
Okay.
Yeah, please ask.
You mentioned about OH and OH minus. Suppose you have a gas where there is OH minus.
Yes, yes. At the alkaline pH, it is O minus, and the normal neutral pH remains as O. There is a pK value.
No, the question is, what I am asking is, suppose there is OH minus, do you have spectrum to tell that?
OH minus or OH radical? What did you say? OH minus is anyway hydroxy minus, this sodium hydroxide. If you put in water, it will become OH minus.
No, no, that is not what I am asking. Actually, I should give you the background. Suppose I have an astrophysical object, like a gas cloud, where suppose there is, anyway, if there is normal OH, you can easily detect it.
Yes.
But the question is that if there is any OH minus.
One can differentiate very easily between OH minus and OH radicals. And one can clearly say that this species spectroscopic line belongs to OH radical and this belongs to O minus. You know,
that is what I am asking. Do you have the spectrum?
Yes, we know the spectrum exactly where it is. And this kind of a thing came very handy when we were doing some work on the diamonds. You know, they wanted to know whether it's real diamond, not real diamond. So you can do Raman spectrum for diamonds. If any time you want to buy, do Raman spectroscopy on that particular diamond. It's very simple. One, you know, 1320 peak if it is there, and amount of width of that one will tell you it's a real diamond or it is a bogus diamond. So just give it to Raman spectroscopy people. So many of them are here. Just ask them to put into this, and they will tell you in 5 minutes how pure the diamond is. So, you know, the knowledge of the spectroscopy is wonderful, you know, it gives you so much information about various things. And at a very, very, very low rate of impurities, one can detect how it happens. 10 to the power minus 15 moles, nanomoles of that. See, for example, if you go to this Tanishq shop for buying the gold, they are always telling you, put your gold into this, and I will tell you how much amount of gold it is and all. Because they're simply doing a diffraction, electron diffraction study of that, and see what the metals are, and they tell you how much amount of gold, how much copper, how much silver you have. But you know, our businessmen are even far smarter than that. What they do, they put a small layer of the gold thing, real gold, on the top of the nuclear gold, and the electron diffraction pattern, if you see your back electron spectrum, it will penetrate so much more. So it will tell you real gold on the top surface is there, 1 millimeter, and remaining is inside the gold. So one has to be very careful knowing what actually is the technique, what is the limitation of technique. But Raman is a very good technique, of course, you can see for diamonds. Yeah, Ranjan.
Prabhu.
Yes, yes, sure, we can do that. That's why I said, if you ready, dose is very important, that we must have a precise dose, and we have measured all dose for dose, how much milligram dose you can give, so that neither they, there was a very great challenge. For example, strawberry, there was a very great challenge. Strawberry becomes redder, better, you know, very nice. If you irradiate that, it looks even better. Point is that you must know at what dose it will continue to have same flavor, same color. You know, except the bacteria are killed. Because if you give more dose, then its color may change. For example, in potatoes, color may change, or onions, for example. Onion is a very successful story. Now, tons and tons of onions are being irradiated in Washi. They come in a truckload and then put inside a cobalt-60 reactor and then goes away. Because abroad, if anything they have to import, at the port itself, they would like to measure how much bacteria it has. And so up till now it used to go to Netherlands and things like that, but now everything is going from here. So very nice technique.
So this brings me another question connected. So when you radiate them,
irradiate.
You know that you have to do in a precise radiation dose.
Yes.
Now is there a check? Is there the quality control later?
Yeah.
Each. That somebody checked and say that.
Yeah. First of all, when you radiate itself, there is a dosimeter attached to that sack. Whichever, you know, now they do not give 1-2 potatoes, they bring in a big sack of the whole thing. So it goes through a conveyor belt and comes out of this side. But before it goes to the enters the conveyor cell, there is a dosimeter attached to that. Actually, this is a plastic dosimeter which measures how much dose rate it changes the color. It's very simple. So it changes the color, so you can measure the color density, optical density. That film is put in the spectrometer, it will tell you how much dose it is. The color is responsible for that. So every sack goes through that process of that. And the strip which is there measured every time, quality control wise, that this particular sack has obtained only this much radiation. Yes, very important. That's why we discovered the other thing too.
And you gave several examples of technology transfer to industry. People will benefit. So is there a business model that the DAE or the BRC uses to?
Yes. Yes, it has evolved. It must say, BRC has evolved that technique of the how much we should charge for our royalty and what is the measure. How do you calculate how much amount of mental thing has gone into this and how many years of people have worked, etc., etc. So there is a well-defined formula now. If you want, I can give it to TIFR. That is depending on how many number of hours, how many people have worked into this. There is a factor of that. And then factor of how much amount of, so all this measured have been put. And then there is a fudge factor, which then depends on whether it's a private industry or whether it's a government industry or government buyer. For example, there are certain government buyers we give at a cheaper rate than to the other people who are doing. So that is in the hand of BRC or authorities of BRC, whether they want to give zero or they want to give value one, depending on that. That has been well defined, and there is a cell which says technology transfer cell, which has been now working almost for 12 years or so.
Do you have something which depends upon what the market value of the produce will also be?
Yes. This
you can't add infinitely more.
No, that's right. So this discussion takes place with the person to person, the factory person, for example. Some of them have already will tell you that this is the market rate of this, and this is the price which I can give. So if you can come to that point, that F factor will go on changing. But basic amount, how much you have just invested in this technology is constant now. Then you add any number of factors which add to this. Yeah.
And is the IPR interest protected, or you take the patents before you?
Yeah, so a lot of discussion on this took place, and government has not allowed us to take patents on that because they said it's the public money which has been spent and we should not be taking patents for the government. But now I am sure, I have been told that recent government has changing the policy, saying that no, if you have put government should earn money from that more. Why you should earn one so small on the amount? So they are saying no, now you patent it and if you want. Now two cases have been patented recently in BRC as well. There was one is a sugar conversion, for example, fructose to glucose. There is a big business in this business. I didn't know that there's so much amount of money involved into this. Just changing the invertase enzyme. By using the inverted enzyme, you can change. And apparently, one of the sugars, either fructose, is much more sweeter than the glucose. So the people like to have this fructose more. So there's an inverted comma. That technology from the biology division has been transferred to them. I think Dharampur or sugar factory or some company, where they are using it for all the time, doing this. So these are things which are not difficult to find out. Well, there are legal obligations, you want to find out what actually can be done. But these are something new to scientists. Scientists are not familiar with this kind of a thing. But if you talk to some, they have legal advisors also over there, so they will talk to them, they will tell you how the patent should be written. First of all, none of us knew how to patent has to be right. How will you write a patent? And it's a very big art. You know, there are patent lawyers who will write in such a manner that they will not disclose all the truth, but at the same time they will tell the truth. You know, it's a very peculiar situation that you have to tell what the process is, but at the same time keep some things hanging here and there so that he cannot reproduce your results right away. So that specialists are there, and some of them are scientists from BRC who have learned now law. B.B. Singh is one of them who is specializing in this patent law business. You go to him and there are now, they will discuss with him how it can be written. Many patents are now being written down now, because in the last 2 years there has been a great change in the policy of the government, that they say we should make money. So if you want to make money, you have to have a patent, because otherwise, see, for example, this hydrogel business, at the time when it was transferred, no patent was taken because the government said don't give it to exclusive one company, because you can be open to as many companies as you want and let them compete with each other. But the Johnson & Johnson wanted exclusive. They said, we give it to us and then nobody else. But this is a very dangerous situation. Many times it has been happening, and we have seen this in Tyvek also, that is, people will buy certain amount of certain technology which have been developed in technology government labs and then just dump it, because so that it doesn't come in the market to compete with their old technology which they are selling. So Johnson & Johnson was trying to do the same. So they are already selling at 500 rupees a stripe for the hydrogel. Now, if they buy this by giving us certain money and then don't let it come in the market to compete with them, they get much more benefit on that. So apparently there were lawyers and different people said don't do that. So this will be better to do that. So you know, you have to play this game. You have to find out which is good for us. Sometimes it is good to give at a low technology itself.
Okay. This business of irradiation of onions and potatoes, what is the economics? I mean, additional
yes.
cost is there to
yes, yes. Actually, in case of potatoes, it comes out to be 75 cents per kilogram, 75 paisa per kilogram. Okay. In case of onions, it is even less, because this is a dose requirement for this much less. So it's a question of all calculations can be done based on how much dose, how much manpower,
how
much
potatoes will last. Huh? Irradiated potatoes.
Yeah, 3 months. Bananas is
so
best case.
You don't need the cold storage? Is that
yeah, you don't need the cold storage. And nowadays we have made a mobile X-ray gamma irradiator. We go to the Nasik, different farmers' place, and irradiate right there in his presence.
But in the volumes that it might be required, is it do we have the...
Yes, cobalt 60 we have enough. Washi, if you go any day, there will be 10 trucks lying there on the line to get them irradiated.
Okay, Washi is fine, but I mean, whole country.
No, as I said now, because knowing the volume... Knowing the volume now, many private company people have understood that there is a lot of money to be made. So they are now all coming up and saying, setting up their own radiation facility, including Sriram factories and things like that, Sriram Research Center in New Delhi. Because they work on a principle that they have to earn the money. I think you may be knowing the Sriram Research Center there is in Delhi. They are it's privately
Sriram
owned.
Sriram fertilizers and all that.
They are the owners of that, but they have research center, Sriram Research Center. But their fundamental works on this, that you make your own projects and make money out of that research center. So they had to go in this kind of technologies and make money on that. So one can go and see and how it works. So it is not an impossible thing to make money, but the question is, one should not be forced to make this kind of a thing. One should not be saying that you stop everything else, you do this, then nothing can come. You cannot become an applied chemist just by applied chemistry doing. You have to have, give freedom to all the people to do what they want to do, and then all these people are basically, all of us are nationalist people. We know that if there is something useful we can do, we will die and like to do. So that is my...
Okay, one last question from Raja.
Potato is related to prevent scouting, I suppose.
Yes.
But how about
the
shelf life?
How the shelf life? Shelf life also changes. Because the shelf life depends on the bacteria. There are different kinds of bacteria, which one is causing the sprouting, another is causing the decay. So you have to decide whether you want the E. coli to be done or the Shilmolina will be done to be cut. So which particular enzyme you would like? Or
the bacteria can come from outside also and then kill it.
Yeah, but that is a different story. Wheat, for example, now in Moscow, for example, they are doing for wheat. A large amount of work on wheat, disinfectation. Well, I don't know whether it will depends on how much the need of the country and how much cobalt 60 we can supply for the whole thing. But basically it can be done, nothing like that. As I said, for example, this Baroda was the first one we tried for sewage. Now, there are from different member of parliaments, they are saying in my unit also you put up a plant, in my unit you put up a plant for the sewage disposition, you know. So once they see something working actually, and then the MPs are related, MPs themselves are giving the starting seed materials. They are saying we get some MP lad money or something like that. You will give this money, you put up the plant there. So there are some things.
I see there is a lot of interest, we of course continue our tea, and everybody can bring their diamonds to my lab for a Raman test for a small tea
testing
tomorrow. And let's thank Professor Mittal again.
Thank you so much. And I must take this chance to give my all credit and guru to my guru Balu Venkatraman, Professor Dharmati, and all the colleagues which we had. You know, they are the people who taught us beginning. You know how what all these things are. And this is, thank you so much.
Sure. Take this technology to Bengal and then so many potatoes.
You are all invited to see that Washi plant. It's actual plant which is running, you know, just like
where
a
Washi.
Washi. APMC market. Near APMC market, there is a big building now has been made where there is a cobalt 60 source and there is a conveyor belt, just like official. I could have shown some photographs, I didn't want to see. But where this goes in a conveyor belt now. Similarly, mangoes, it goes out. After George Bush.